This is a download from Nature Publishing Group.
Hello and welcome to this special podcast from Nature on the Eppendorf Young Investigator Award. Every year since 1995 and in partnership with Nature since 1998, Eppendorf has awarded this prize to a young European scientist in recognition of their outstanding research in biomedical science. The 2013 winner was Ben Lehner from the Centro de Regulatio Genomica in Barcelona. Ben was awarded the prize of €15,000 for his research into how genes regulate phenotype, the traits and characteristics of an individual, like their behaviour or their risk of disease. He uses worms and yeast to try to understand why changes in the genome only kill some individuals who inherit them, even when these individuals are genetically identical and share the same environment. I went along to the awards ceremony, which took place at the European Molecular Biology Laboratory Advanced Training Centre in Heidelberg. Congratulations on winning the award. How did it feel when you received the phone call?
Very surprising. It's the honest answer. I was not expecting it at all. It's great to be recognised in this way, especially because we're doing basic research and, you know, we're from a new institute and a new centre, and it's very good.
Tell me a little bit about your research.
So our main interest is in why individuals are different, so why they're phenotypically different. And we're interested in this from the genetics and the environment, so nature versus nurture, but also when this is not enough to explain things. So we're particularly interested in when the genome sequence of an individual is not enough to predict their characteristics.
And by phenotype, we mean the physical and biochemical makeup of an individual.
Yeah. Phenotype means all the characteristics and properties of an individual. But we're really looking at very severe phenotypes like life and death. So why does one individual inheriting a harmful mutation die and another individual inheriting exactly the same mutation not be affected at all? And we know from model organisms, so from mice, mammals, and from simpler organisms like C. elegans, the nematode, that you can have many identical twins which all carry the same harmful mutation, but only some of them are affected by this mutation. So some of them die and some of them survive. And this is not due to the environment that they're in, because they're in the same environment. It's not due to their genome sequence, because they all have the same genome sequence. So it's not nature and it's not nurture in the classical sense. It's something else. There's some sort of variation going on.
So if it's not down to the genes and it's not down to the environment, what do you think is causing this variation?
Well, we think that some of it is from actual variation that happens during early development. So we all start from one cell, you know, with one copy of a genome from your mother and one from your father. And then from this one cell, you make the animal. And this is an extremely complicated process. And there is variation in this process, which is just chemical variation. So whether one mutation in one gene that you inherit has an effect on you or not can, we think, and others as well, depend a bit on the particular amount to which other genes are switched on and off at particular times during development.
So this interplay between genes and, I guess, the products of these genes can dramatically affect the biology of an individual.
Yeah, well, we know that this is true in single-celled organisms, so in bacteria and in yeast, and we know that this is true in simple multicellular animals, so these microscopic nematodes. Nearly everything we know which is important about human diseases comes ultimately from people working in bacteria and yeast and viruses and these simpler systems. So the actual phenotypes are different, the actual pathways are often different, but the way that it's working and the general principles of how genetics works is all the same. And it's much more efficient, it's much more cost-effective and powerful to study these kinds of questions in these simple systems where we can control what's going on and really understand how it works than it is to spend huge amounts of money and try and do this in humans or in mice.
Can you give me an example of when genes or a change in gene expression can result in a very different phenotype?
One of the examples we study in C. elegans is a mutation in a transcription factor, so a gene which controls the expression of other genes. And half of the individuals inheriting this die. They hatch and they die after embryogenesis. And the rest of them survive and they're absolutely fine. And whether this mutation affects you or not partially depends on the activity of two other genes during development. One is another transcription factor, and the other one is a very general part of the cell, a very bit of the core cell machinery, proteins which help the folding of other proteins. And if we go in and we measure the levels of these two other genes, how much they're being switched on or off, then we can predict much more accurately whether this inherited mutation has an effect or not.
So once you've identified which gene or which gene product is the factor influencing that, mm-hmm. how easy is it to predict whether an individual will be born with a certain risk of disease or a certain trait?
Yeah. So in humans, this would be very difficult, because the reason we can do it in these simple organisms is because we can measure and quantify genes being switched on and off during their development as they're developing. But for later, for adult diseases or adult phenotypes, if you could find some intermediate phenotype, so sort of a phenotypic trait to measure that reflects on this variation, so it may be a level of protein in the blood or a metabolite, and you knew how to connect that with the genetics, then this might work. So I really think for predictive or personalized medicine, for common important things, is it'll have to be this combination of understanding the genetics and then actually measuring something about each person, about how they have developed and what the levels of proteins and metabolites are in them, and then combining those two together to make predictions. I don't think for many common diseases you'll be able to do it just from the genome sequence. But the important thing to say about the last few years has been absolute revolution for human genetics. We now know thousands of genes associated with particular diseases. And this is extremely important, because now we know the pathways and the processes that do go wrong in these diseases. The genetics is really great for finding cause and effect. So we now know how to study these diseases and which pathways you should think about targeting to cure them. But that's a very different thing from being able to say we can sequence somebody and predict what's going to happen to them. And that is something that still is a long way off.
And is that something you'll be working towards?
Yeah, this is what we really want to try and understand, is why are individuals different? A patient going into hospital doesn't want to know the typical outcome of a mutation they carry. They want to know what will actually happen to them. And so we want to use these simple organisms to work out how to do that. Like, how can you actually measure something about an individual after their development and use that information in combination with the genetics to make accurate predictions? Yeah, this is what we would like to be able to do.
Ben Lehner there. I next spoke with Professor Reinhard Jahn from the Max Planck Institute for Biophysical Chemistry in Göttingen and chairman of the panel who chose the winner. I began by asking him what criteria the judges use when sifting through the applicants.
Obviously, we want to have an excellent scientist, but there are perhaps quite a few excellent scientists, so we look for also quite a bit of originality and let's say someone who is not working in the mainstream field and following what many other people are doing and then perhaps doing very excellent work, but someone who is original and has own ideas and then come up with something which is unusual and is then in that respect successful and makes it work and shows, hey, if sometimes I think about things which others haven't thought about or which my supervisors, my formers might have told me it's crazy, and you say, well, I don't think it's crazy, and then you work on it, and these are the type of people we're looking for.
And presumably Ben Lehner met those criteria.
Well, we were convinced by that, because he came up with a fairly new concept by looking at basically how genes regulate phenotypes, and there was quite a, you know, particularly after the Human Genome Project, we all were believing that the genes would determine more or less phenotypes, behavior, susceptibility to diseases, and so on. And that's still true, but it was oversimplified. And so there was a lot of frustration, and Ben Lehner came up with some very original ideas how to tackle that problem.
How significant do you think his research is for tackling things like disease?
Well, it's probably too early to tell, but I think it will give us a much better handle on the better use of genomics to handle, let's say, to also predict disease and to perhaps come up with solutions.
The award is presented in this wonderful centre, the EMBL Centre in the hills near Heidelberg. What's the significance of hosting the awards here?
Well, first of all, it's one really a truly European center, because EMBL is a European institution and is one of the very few European joint research institutions that is really having an enormous impact on Europe. It's a research institute, they have outstations in several countries, and scientists cannot stay here forever. They stay here for a maximum of 9 years, and then they have to leave. And so they have a lot of currently leading people in Europe have been trained at the MBL, have worked at the MBL, so it has an enormous impact in its field, molecular biosciences within Europe.
And are you looking forward to next year's awards?
For sure. I mean, this is an honorable task, and it's also, I feel, privileged to be able to be part of this committee. And for me, when you get on in Korea, it's always a privilege to interact with young people and then see how young people are really making progress, and they are the ones who will change the world in the future.
That was Professor Reinhard Jahn. After the ceremony, I talked to fellow judge Professor Maria Leptin, director of the European Molecular Biology Organization. I first asked Maria how she thought the award might affect Ben's work in years to come.
It's actually good in this particular case, I think, because he's not working on something that's automatically awarded with prizes. He's working on very fundamental and, in a way, very much ivory tower science. So I find it's very satisfying that this kind of totally independent, totally curiosity-driven research is awarded. I think that may be an important aspect of this particular prize.
Now, this is the 18th time the prize has been awarded. What do young scientists stand to gain from winning the award?
Well, I think, you know, all of us scientists, we're never really sure about whether anybody cares what we're doing, whether we're on the right path, whether anybody cares. And actually, you know, for many young people, the families don't care, the spouses don't care, the neighbors don't care. And so they have a stamp now that says, look, what I'm doing is good, even if I can't explain it to you. So that's one thing. The other thing is it helps for careers. That's also wonderful. So he doesn't have to defend the kind of work he's doing. It's, you know, it's clear it's been recognized by a prize, by a very, very tough panel. And so that helps them. They can concentrate more on doing their science well rather than selling it.
And if you had a message for young scientists out there listening to this podcast who are considering perhaps applying for next year's prize, what would you say to them?
Don't calculate, don't plan, do what you're doing and do it as best as you could. Sure, apply, but you know, there's a large number of applications and it's not always easy even to decide who the top 10 are. And then when it comes to deciding between the top 10 for the top number one, there are many, many, many who are not going to be selected. So as with everything in science, you just have to keep at it and do it, apply. But be aware that your independence is paramount. You've got to have a good record of achievement, even at a young age. And you have to convince the committee that you have the spark, the originality, and the ideas, rather than just the proficiency. You have to have that special extra if you want to be the one on the podium.
That was Maria Leptin. That's all from this special podcast from Nature on the Eppendorf Young Investigator Award. I'm Thea Cunningham.
This is a download from Nature Publishing Group.